So dithering, fudging, waffling and political drift, just some of the criticisms levelled at the Secretary of State, Karen Bradley, yesterday after she delayed a decision to cut MLA pay. The North Down MP, Lady Sylvia Herman, didn't mince her words in the Commons when Mrs Bradley told MPs she was minded to slash Assembly members' wages by 27.5%, but wanted to consult the parties first.
Well, I listened very carefully to the Secretary of State's statement and noted very carefully that she was very decisive about announcing an increase in rates in Northern Ireland. I was extremely disappointed, to put it mildly, that the Secretary of State continues to dither about cutting the salaries of MLAs. Doesn't the Secretary of State accept and recognise that it is morally indefensible that MLAs should continue to receive their full salary in the absence of a functioning assembly for 14 months? Morally indefensible.
Later, the Secretary of State sat down for an interview with BBC Northern Ireland political editor Mark Devenport. Now, here is what she had to say on the issue of MLA pay.
You'll know my predecessor asked Trevor Rainey to do a report on recommendations for what we might do with MLA pay. And it's been really clear to me since I was appointed at the beginning of January, everybody I've met across Northern Ireland says that they want to see action in this area. But it's also right that we do it properly. We are going to be potentially reducing people's salaries. Now, everyone would agree, I'm sure, that the right thing to do in that situation is to make sure you go through the proper process, give people the opportunity to have their say. Some people might think that 27.5% isn't enough of a pay cut. Some people might think there shouldn't be a pay cut at all. So I want to hear from everybody. I want to have people give people the chance to make their representations so that we can do this process properly.
So what do you reckon? Is the time up? 0-30-30-80-55-55? Or as Karen Bradley has said, is it time for more consultation now with the parties as to what they want to do? That number again, 0-30-30-80-55-55. On the line we have the SDLP MLA, Mark H. Durkin. We have Naomi Long, the leader of the Alliance Party. And we also have Ulster Unionist MLA, Doug Beattie. Good morning to all three of you.
Good morning.
Mark H. Durkin, we'll start with you. You know what the public will be saying this morning. Enough, this has been 14 coming on 15 months now. Make a decision.
Yes, that's what the public have been saying this morning. That's what the public have been saying for a long time. It's also what the SDLP have been saying for a long time. I think it was in June, early June, when our party first stated publicly that MLAs should have their pay reduced. We should not be paying for a job we are not doing. And believe me, it's extremely frustrating for us that we aren't doing or performing our full role. We want to be in there legislating to improve the lives of everyone here in the North. However, sadly, that's not the case, so we shouldn't be being paid as legislators.
What options, if any, Mark, do MLAs have to give that money back? So if they want to voluntarily cut their own pay, I understand they might not be able to stop it coming towards them, but is there something they can do to return it?
Well, MLAs can do, as you can, as anyone can, whatever they want.
So if the SDLP, you see, but you see where I'm going. If the SDLP, for example, say they are for this, they would agree with a pay cut, then why would they not voluntarily give some of that money back themselves and not having to wait on the Secretary of State to reduce the salary before it reaches your bank accounts?
Yes, well, we do agree that there should be a reduction, but don't forget, Bunny, for the past year, we've been told that a deal was possible, that a deal was likely, and then that a deal was imminent. We've been up and down that garden path a few times. Sadly, now it's become increasingly and depressingly clear that a deal is highly unlikely. Therefore, it doesn't look like that we're going to see a return to our devolved institutions anytime soon. So the time is certainly now to act. And we will be calling on, as we have been, the Secretary of State to implement some of the recommendations in the Rainey report, including especially those around our own pay.
Naomi Long, when the Secretary of State, if she has these conversations with the different parties like yourselves, surely she could say, well, already I know where the Alliance Party stand, I know where the SDLP stand, I know even where Sinn Féin stand, etc., etc., so why do I need to have these talks? Or do you think she suspects when she has those conversations, perhaps behind closed doors, that the conversation might be different than expected?
Well, I would see no reason why she would think that, because we've stated our position publicly. We've put it in writing to her. In fact, we reiterated it when I wrote to her after the collapse of the most recent series of talks, I wrote to her again and said that I felt that the time was now long past where action should be taken to deal with MLA salaries. And we had already set out that we thought they should be reduced by about a third until we can see. But we've also said that should be time limited. I mean, to be clear, continuing to be paid as an MLA when there is no prospect of any assembly being restored is not an option. So we need to accept that if there is going to be a reduction in salary, that has to be measured against there being some process to restore devolution, because without that, MLAs will have no role, and therefore it's simply a matter of moving to redundancy. So from my perspective, I think it's very clear where we stand. I don't know what other parties are saying to the Secretary of State. I know the SDLP have been very explicit in their position. I don't know what other parties are saying, but from our perspective, there's no need for further consultation. There's already been a report brought to the Secretary of State which gave very explicit guidance. We don't agree with all of that. We don't agree, for example, that our staff should be punished for the current failure of the talks. It doesn't affect their work. They continue to provide a constituency service as they would have done. But we do agree that MLA should have to take responsibility for the fact that there isn't an assembly.
So you've heard there, Doug Beattie, what Naomi has to say. No need for further consultation on this. So when Karen Bradley comes to talk to the UUP, what will you be telling her?
Well, I think we're all unanimous in this. They need to be perfectly honest with you. We cannot sustain the levels of pay for MLAs when we're not doing the job. Now, let me be absolutely clear. I don't want my pay cut. I want to be in the Assembly. I want to be in Stormont. I want to be doing my job. And there's absolutely nothing I can do to affect that. The gates have been locked. They've been padlocked. And I don't have the key and I can't get in. But as far as pay is concerned, you cannot keep the levels of pay as they are now when we're not doing the job that we're supposedly being paid for. There does not need to be any more consultation. What we're seeing here is the Secretary of State stalling. She's stalling to see if something will come up that will unlock those gates. It's not likely to. So I think she needs to get on with this now and implement the Rainey report. I think we, and all the parties, I'm going to be honest, all the parties have been quite clear. And I don't think that the Secretary of State will hear anything different behind closed door than she's not hearing now in the open. And that is, we need to cut the MLA's pay now.
Is there any possibility that a cut in MLA pay could destabilise the talks process even further? We know it's quite a fragile political situation here. And, you know, for those that want to see Stormont back up and running, will this in any way help that, or can this only really make matters worse?
Well, I don't see how it can be any worse than what it is now.
Well, I guess, think of MLAs. You said yourself, you don't want your pay cut. I would imagine no MLAs really want their pay cut. You know, I get what you're saying, that you understand why it possibly should be, but no one really wants to take a pay cut. And if you're doing a job and you think, I am putting 110% into this, I am doing my best, and then suddenly you start to reduce your salary, you know, you've got a mortgage, you've got bills to pay, you have to pay your rates like everyone else, then, you know, why would that be acceptable? Why would you then not think, as a result, I need to look for a job elsewhere? And then you could see MLAs drop away from the whole process. And let's be honest, we're very critical of our politicians, but they are vital. And if we then start to lose what we have, we don't know what they'll be replaced with, if anything. So how could that in any way help the talks as they are?
Well, the reality is, Vinny, is this, and I would say of the 90 MLAs, at least 80 of them, if not all 90 of them, have been looking for other jobs just in case. This whole thing was to completely collapse and we were to be served our redundancy numbers.
So 80 of the MLAs, as far as you're aware, are looking for jobs elsewhere?
No, I never said that. I'm saying I wouldn't be surprised if 80, if not all 90, are not looking elsewhere for other jobs in case those redundancy notices are handed to us.
Well, why would you say that? Have people been telling you that they're looking for jobs elsewhere?
No, I'm just using common sense. If I was in any job, that was under threat of being made redundant, I would be looking elsewhere. Now, I don't see MLAs as being any different from any other person who lives in our society today. They all have to look and be ready because they all have those mortgages. And I think you laid it out very well indeed. But the point that I'm making is this, Vinny, is it can't get any worse than it is now. When you have Simon Hamilton who is saying that we're not going to have an assembly this year, possibly not even next year, then there does not seem to be, as it stands now, any form of getting back to the assembly that we had before it collapsed 14 months ago. Therefore, there's absolutely no reason whatsoever to not cut MLA's pay by the 27% that has been recommended.
Okay. When the Secretary of State, Karen Bradley, was talking to our political editor, Mark Davenport, Mark also asked her what she meant when she referred to possible other arrangements in the interim with no executive and whether that actually meant a shadow assembly. Have a listen.
Well, a number of parties have put forward suggestions. I'm sure you've seen the suggestions, having spoken to local politicians, of what could be done. You know, there is no scrutiny at the moment. There is no opportunity for backbench MLAs to come forward private members' bills. There's no opportunity for the things they want to do to represent their constituents. And I well understand why there's a frustration and that they would like to see something. So I'm looking at all the ideas that have been put to me, all the suggestions, mindful throughout of the legal position, the fact I don't want to undermine the Belfast Agreement. I want to be in a position that the parties, when they decide to come back into devolved government, can do so without that being an obstacle. So I'm looking at all of those. And clearly, it needs to be something that has cross-community approval and consent so that it actually is a success. So all of those are things that I'm considering. It would be wrong of me, though, not to consider the suggestions that have been made to me, and I would welcome further suggestions.
Would you welcome that, Mark H. Durkin, a type of shadow assembly here?
Well, what I would say is MLA pay isn't the only issue that is being docked or has been delivered over. There are a lot much more important issues to everyone out there, and I think it's vitally important that we do get something up and running whereby those changes can be made. For example, there's a suicide prevention strategy, Protect Life 2, that's sitting in a drawer somewhere gathering dust. I've been working with people, and I might come back to you on this one during the week, Bunny, who are going to be adversely impacted by the 1% pay increase that health workers got and that your show worked so hard to get them. So there are a lot of issues that we do need to have an assembly up and running to deal with. Our party's been pretty clear from the start on this as well, and while Karen Bradley says she doesn't want to undermine the Good Friday Agreement, then let's look to the Good Friday Agreement for the answers. There is a mechanism therein that we go to an intergovernmental conference, that we get both governments to come in. We now see what was very almost a deal between the DUP and Sinn Féin. We believe that both governments should now sit down and say, well, that's what you are going to agree. Let's get it agreed. And then get back in and get doing the job that you have been paid for 13 months to do and haven't been doing, and affect these real positive changes that everyone out there wants to see.
Okay, Mark H., I know you have to go. Thank you for your time this morning. 030 30 80 55 55. Naomi, and let's not forget that in 3 weeks, the current MLA salary is $49,500 a year. So in 3 weeks, you will automatically get a pay rise of £500, increasing that up to 50,000. And then you hear what Lady Sylvia Herman said, you know, the rates increase. That was something that there was little or no hesitation on. So this will be seen by the public as another kick to the shin. They won't like this. This will be hard for them to swallow.
Absolutely, and that's why we said that this needs to be done and done now, because I think what most people would expect is that we'll be reduced by our current salary by a third, not by any future salary by a third. I mean, I think that would be pretty hard for the public to swallow. And you know, Vinny, at the end of the day, we were elected to do a job, but it's hugely frustrating that we're not able to do that job. The only thing I disagree with Doug about here is that he says there's nothing we can do to change it. I actually think that all the parties can create the conditions in which progress can be made. We all have a contribution to make to that in terms of making it easier for people to shift their positions, in terms of making it easier for people to be able to reach agreement. And so we sat down after the collapse of the last talks and all the frustration that we had, we sat down and wrote very detailed suggestions to Karen Bradley, a very long letter, but with lots of suggestions in it about where we can go from here, about how she could act in terms of Westminster to remove some of the blockages that are there to restore and deal.
Okay, but what impact did that have?
Well, she's considering those proposals now. She's taken legal advice on those. I've been in contact with her about them, and she's looking at some of those. There's also the option.
She's minded to look at them, Naomi.
Oh, she is looking at them. It's not about minded to look at them. She is looking at them, and she's inviting other parties also to come forward with proposals. But we did that proactively because at the end of the day, I want to see the Assembly restored.
I want to get back to doing the job that I was elected to do. I want to be able to make a change for the better for my constituents. And so some of that responsibility rests on me to come up with ideas and solutions as to how we get there. We didn't create this blockage. We didn't create this mess. But it is partly my responsibility to fix it because I'm an elected representative and that's what we were elected to do. So look, we've put forward suggestions. For example, there's nothing to stop the Assembly sitting, except for the fact we can't elect a First and Deputy First Minister, a Justice Minister, and then an Executive. But the Assembly could technically sit if we didn't have to do those things at the start, and we could get back into committee. We could be scrutinising the work that goes on. We could appoint the policing board.
And would that not then need to be reflected in the salary? Because would that not suggest, Naomi, as a result, you're doing more work and you're earning your money?
Well, we would certainly be doing more work. We wouldn't be doing the full legislative range of options. But yes, of course, that would have an impact on the judgments that are to be made. We would also have to look at things, for example, like could committees bring forward legislation instead of ministers? Could committees advise the government if the government's going to have to go through a period of direct rule instead of having a situation where we have no input into what happens? Could committees write reports and forward them to the government for the government then to enact those proposals?
Okay.
So there are all sorts of things that I believe, if we're creative, that the Assembly members can do to try and get over this logjam. Because right now, we are simply allowing all the work that, and the investment that's been made over 20 years to be squandered. And I think that's shameful. So I think we need to get creative and start to do the job we were elected to do, which is problem solving. And the biggest problem we have now is getting ourselves back round the table to do the job that we were elected to do.
Doug Beattie, if we go back to the basics of a possible pay cut for MLAs, is this to reflect the workload? Is it to punish the stalemate? Is it to encourage talks, or a combination of all three, as you see it?
Well, I see it as reflecting the workload. I don't see it as punishment. I mean, it's not a punishment. If you're an MLA in this year purely for the money, then you're in it for the wrong reason. So it's not a punishment, but it would reflect the workload that we're doing. But I've got to agree with Naomi on some issues here, and that is we do need to be inventive on how we look at this. And yes, a shadow assembly could work and it would give us those scrutiny bodies. But then the other thing is we don't have to be inventive at all. What we can do is go back to the Belfast Agreement. And if we go back to the Belfast Agreement, as it was written before it was corrupted by the St Andrews Agreement, we have the basis to get the Assembly up and running again. And we have lobbied hard over many years with the Secretary of State to have those St Andrews Agreements changed to get us back to what we voted for in 1998.
Okay, Doug Beattie, thanks. Naomi Long, thank you as well.